outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, if all goes well, by the time this airs, Sarah and I will be parked alongside a creek in Golden, Colorado.
Ooh, okay. So you think you'll be in Colorado area by this time, hopefully.
Yeah, the plan is to leave Saturday, which is about, this will be, the 18th as we tape this. So we're leaving on the 23rd and make our way to see our son and his wife in Denver area and hang out with a few folks there. And then we start the real part of this trip up through, South Dakota and Wyoming and Montana, and still hoping to get into Canada. We'll have to see if we can get all that worked out and the weather allows, and we'll work our way back, getting a ton of interest from people that want us to come, especially from this group of folks that kind of been leaving this, I don't know if they would call it a cult thing. It's just this very distressed group of people who've been together forever. And I did a Zoom with them on Sunday with about 200 people in a Zoom call, just talking about some of the things that they're asking about. And now lots of little folks along the way, different places. So it seems like, wow, this, we didn't plan this trip for that, but it looks like that's a part of what it is.
Is this group dispersed all over the country then? All over the world. Okay.
All over the world. And
they're connected with each other and are finding their way out of this thing, and but still are relationally connected with one another, or how is that working?
Well, they do the convention thing, which gets them together now and then. I'm not sure how close those relationships were before. There's a website now where they kind of hang out and are sharing their stories and kind of trying to figure this out together. It's where Finding Church just exploded among them. Mm. And they've all read it, now getting into He Loves Me. I don't, it's really been strange. Talk about something that was not even on my radar 4 or 5 months ago. And now it's a big part of my life right now, helping them navigate this space and find their way into a real relationship with Jesus, and not just find something else to fill the void of what the religious life they had has left them. Hmm. So it's just amazingly hungry people. I feel like my heart's knit with theirs. I really do, which is strange because I just do. I feel like God's kind of said, hey, hang around there. And if they need your help, offer to help them. And so we'll be interesting to see how this trip goes. If all these little connections we have with folks want to actually materialize into sitting down together and talking, but sure beats a Zoom conversation, man. When you got 200 people, you can't see but two or three of them, and you can't really gauge by their eyes, did that thing I just said make sense or not make sense? And so the face-to-face is much preferable, but I don't have the time to travel all over the world to all these places and people them all individually. So it's kind of nice that they're caring for each other in this process together. And they're asking questions, and they're not trying to manipulate outcomes with each other. And they've been very gracious to me, and it's been really tender. I think Sunday was just a wonderful day to help them take an hour to help them walk through what they're walking through. Just walk alongside them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice. And welcome, best thing you heard this week?
Slow down.
I'm jumping all over. We better try that again.
Welcome. Okay, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. And if you're along our route in the Pacific Northwest and want to get in touch with me, please do. And we're going to stop in where we can, and as much as Sarah and I have the capacity to do that, but this is also a whole lot of being in the woods together, Sarah and I, and just enjoying the beauty of Montana and Canada. And there's a lot of that too. We're just Sarah and I enjoying that. And we've joked about, we come home, we may sell the RV. This may be our last trip.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been great, but it feels like maybe this is a passing thing. And so if you need an RV, make us an offer. You can have the Livestream mobile app or RV or whatever. Anyway.
Well, best thing that you heard this week, Wayne.
Oh my gosh. I heard this a couple of weeks ago, actually. Sarah and I have gone on a Ken Burns documentary binge. So we joined PBS enough to be able to get access to all these. And I forget which one this was on. He was quoting Leo Tolstoy, who said, "The most difficult subjects can be explained to the slowest-witted man if he's not yet formed an opinion of them already." But the simplest thing can't be made clear to the most intelligent man if he's firmly persuaded he knows already.
Ooh.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
And then Ken Burns said this, no one changes their mind because of an argument, but they will because of a story.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. I love that.
I do too. It kind of takes arguing out of the fray and allows you to think in terms of, can I tell a story that might engage this person? And when the Revelation 12 scripture about they'll overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, which that's a dingy passage to me, because testimonies growing up where I grew up with just Aunt Maud standing up for the 100th time, you know, telling about her conversion experience or whatever. But the strength of your testimony is the word. How is God getting me through cancer? How is, you know, how is God helping Sarah with trauma? When your story is down to something that's life-changing to you, not intended to manipulate, just intended to open a door for someone else to think differently. I had someone stop me on the street the other day and just said, you know, your journey, watching you over the last year, from coming out here, shuffling along with I forget what they call those things.
Walker?
Yeah, a walker. How can you forget that? creeping down the street in a walker to now just out, every day I see you leave your house.
Mm.
He said, you inspire me. I thought, gee, that's sweet.
Mm.
So that's my story.
Oh, I love that.
And I love sharing that because I think that has more power than trying to argue a point with somebody.
Hmm.
So what's the best thing you've heard this week?
Well, it was interesting. It actually came out of a conversation with a good friend of mine, Jason Jacobs, out of Michigan. And he and I were just catching up and chatting. And he actually shared a moment from the God journey that I wasn't even aware of. And he was just talking about how another member of this group of guys that I have had the joy of getting to hang out with a couple of times, I mentioned them on a podcast and just was talking about how joyful it was to be able to connect with them and the relationships that have come out of that. And one of the people was listening to that podcast and had been feeling very unseen, had been feeling like they were not being seen in the world, were not connecting, were they were just having a hard day. And they heard that and they just had this powerful emotional experience because they're like, here is a guy from Wyoming that randomly connected with us in Michigan and we were able to have great community and relationship, and that impacted his life, and now I'm being seen again. Whether people will, like most of the people will never even know it was me, let alone ever meet me, and yet being seen in the moment. And that, so Jason shared that with me, and that just was so powerful to me because it's like, Lord, this is what community, this is what the bride of Christ looks like when I was talking to Jason a little bit about, you know, the 1,000th podcast, and I was just kind of laughing because I was like, it's kind of weird that people want to tune in and like hear two guys have conversations with each other about what's going on in their life. Like, it's kind of odd that people want to do that. And yet, like, just how it's just one access point that God uses in his incredible web of connections to bring his bride together, to connect people with his heart in just ways that we couldn't even imagine. I loved it. It was awesome.
That's very sweet. Yeah. Yep. It's always good to feel seen.
Yes.
And not feel isolated and alone and nobody even knows or cares about me.
Awesome.
What's on your mind this week?
Oh man. I've got a few things. So you sent me a email about some AI stuff. And it actually is unpacking a book that I actually have read called Super Bloom. And it's really exploring the space of AI and what AI potentially is going to do, or the impact that it's going to have on human relationships, what humanity looks like as far as our ability to connect and build community with one another. And man, especially like after I had the conversation with Jason Jacobs about how our dialogue had impacted him and how that had come out of a relationship, out of a genuine in-person experience, sitting around a campfire with a group of guys and just getting to know them and connect with them. it just really made me circle back to some of the dialogue that was in this email that you sent me, and also in the book. So yeah, I want to unpack it a little bit with you.
We've run across a few AI things of late. I don't know how much
we have.
You do in the academic setting. I think with my ongoing demographic and people I hang out with, we don't run up against AI an awful lot. But I have a growing concern as to how ubiquitous this is getting to be. Yeah. It's certainly crept into all my software now. When I try to write anything, it keeps throwing suggestions as to a better way to say this. And yet I know there are formulas behind that, that eventually, if everybody does that, it's going to flatten our language to
yes.
the same expression, which to me, when I read it, I'm going, yeah, probably is a better way to say it. But then I think this is a more Wayne way to say it.
Yes.
And so I'd rather stick with that. And you're in a more academic setting, younger people, this is really infiltrating their lives and probably their futures in ways they can't avoid.
Yeah. No, my world is saturated with it. I mean, literally, I'm in the middle of our orientation week. We're just coming back for the new semester, and we've already had two major conversations about AI and how do we...
Who's we? With students like? Or with faculty? Who's the we?
So this is faculty. So this is the president of the college, our upper administration, the faculty, having conversations about what does AI look like in our educational process, in our institution? What does it look like as we're training young people to go out into the world? Our president made a comment that he was talking with a community member and their student had just come back from the first week of classes. And one of the things that this parent asked their student was, so what are you hearing about AI? How are you learning? How are they teaching you how to navigate this new incredible world of AI technology? And the student's response was how not to use it to cheat. So there was a little bit of conversation there, you know, with the parent and or the president of our college. And yet, gosh, it is. So for me, there's some big things that are starting to really get highlighted. One of the big things is that even with people that I am doing coaching with, they're starting to quote AI back to me. So they're taking their like deep heart conversations. They're taking it to these AI chatbots and looking to get responses back. So Harvard did a study a little while ago where they actually tried to, they had people do counseling, one with an AI chatbot remotely, and then one with normal, regular human beings. And they did not tell them if it was a chatbot or not a chatbot. So until after the study, and then they were evaluating what level of satisfaction did they receive from the quality of care, the responses that they were getting, et cetera. And initially in the study, when they told them, oh, actually, yeah, this was AI, this wasn't a human being, then they saw a significant decrease in satisfaction of the level of care that they received. And yet now I'm seeing more and more people from a wide range of ages pressing into AI, even as their relational tool of, no, I'm going to go and ask my deep heartfelt questions to the chatbot and see what responses I get back instead of, yeah, I went and had this conversation with this person, or I had a good community of friends that I went and talked to, or I had some people that really knew me that I had a dialogue with about a challenging thing that I was facing in my life. And that that makes me nervous, especially as somebody who is training people to go into the mental health field and to be working in a relational capacity with people. It definitely unnerves me. And one of the quotes that came out of the email that you sent me that really struck me was, we are profoundly ill-suited to live our lives, especially our social lives, online. And gosh, I think that is so true. Whether it's social media, whether it's videos, whether it's DM messaging, whether it's video text, whether it's Snapchat, or whether it's this new AI world, I think we are profoundly ill-suited to live our social lives online. I don't think we were designed to. I don't think that was the intent ever for humanity.
And yeah, that's been going on previous to AI. It's almost like the whole social media world has been kind of a setup to I'm corresponding or talking to people through my computer. I'm not really seeing them. And now I'm talking to a chatbot. I'm not really seeing it either. But the idea, and I hear more and more of people talking like the chatbot is a person, whether it's a therapist, like you're saying, or a spiritual director of some kind that is actually giving them wisdom from various things. I guess you would have to read. And like one man told me, it's like he's read, the chatbot has looked through all the literature of the mystics and then gives input from all of that literature that no other human being would have. So it's a valuable, and he talks about, I think in a probably a more positive way, it's a mirror reflecting back to me some of the things that I'm discovering inside myself. But the fact is I'm a little bit, I don't know what to say. I'm a little bit weirded out. Let me just say that because it doesn't mean anything. I mean, I'm a little bit weirded out by the fact that this is not a person engaged in this conversation, listening to God together. This is an algorithm that's coming up with some language to feed back to a person. And it seems that, I mean, you got people now who say their boyfriend / girlfriend is their chatbot because they feel so seen and so reflected upon by this entity that they talk to out of their computer or phone or whatever. Yeah. And that really does creep me out. Like, wow, we are already losing our ability to have a conversation with somebody, even through disagreements, even through seeing things differently, and negotiate that space rather than having a bot that is somewhat programmed to keep me online. So it's going to say really nice things. That's a beautiful question, Wayne. You're very wise for asking such thing. It's trying to keep me in that space with them in the same way social media algorithms did 8 years ago, 9 years ago.
See, and I'm not sure if it's gone there yet, as far as for example, with social media, where they literally had social psychologists and neuropsychologists coming in and saying, okay, how do we make this as addictive as possible? Because the users are they're our audience. They're our target.
They're our product.
They're our product that we are making money off of. Yes. And I don't know if they've fully merged those two things, so AI and that incentive of how do we consume as much possible time as we can from this person's life yet with chatbots and open source AI. But when they do, I mean, we're all, like you said, I feel like social media, modern social media, has been a stepping stone to prep us as a society to move into this greater space of social isolation, because it's easier, right? So you think about, okay, my chatbot is going to be my romantic partner. They're going to be my emotional world. Well, yeah, they're going to feed you back everything that you want to hear. They're not going to challenge you. They're not going to know you. They're not going to have like a different perspective on who you are. They're not going to have a different lens. They're just going to feed you back whatever you want to hear. And gosh, it's like, and it doesn't take any risk. It doesn't take in. There's no onboarding process to build any kind of relational foundation with this computer entity. It's like, no, I mean, what do I have to do to create that relational collateral? You don't have to do anything for it.
And you can name your chatbot. You know, nobody calls her a chatbot. It can be Alice or Jenny or Bob or whoever you
whatever want. Whatever they want it. And soon, I mean, you see the progression of Elon Musk and some of the stuff that he's doing. He's wanting to be able to integrate that into these animatronic robots and these actual robot helpers that now all of a sudden was not very far away. Are we going to have these entities, these things that also are integrating into this AI world and having these conversations with us? And it breaks my heart, because from my perspective, it is all a counterfeit to authentic relationship, to authentic connection. One of the things that the author of Superbloom goes on to kind of unpack is that we have the ability to adapt, right? Like, as humanity, we've adapted to different technology. We adapted to the printing press. We adapted to the light bulb. We adapted to electricity. Like, we adapted to these things. It doesn't necessarily mean that our lives are better for it. Have we adapted to it? Sure. But does it mean that our lives are better for it?
Or is our society more cohesive because of it?
Which absolutely.
You can actually say absolutely. It's not. It's actually fragmented us even more and caused us to be suspicious and caused us to engage dialogue without thought to the person's emotions on the other side of it.
Yeah.
Who is it? What am I doing to them in pushing from my point of view? We've got a good friend who called me, gosh, I don't remember, 3 years ago when, and he said, or he wrote me an email, I think, or a text. The world has changed today. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, AI was released in the wild. And I went, okay, yeah, it'll be a blip in the screen. I've kind of grown to think quite differently about it now in 3 years. It really has just about changed everything. And I love my friend. He's a Microsoft AI guy. So he has a very healthy view, I think, of AI. I would say that. He has a very... Mm-hmm. Idealistic, this is what it's designed to do. And for the ability to bring information to us, for the ability to, if it's accurate information, and you have Correct. To know a certain amount to know whether or not what I'm being fed is accurate or not. And yes. a lot of it is not, because they will make up things, these bots, for to fill in the gaps that they have. But yep. they can bring information, and they can help us express that information in ways that are more readable. I mean, he does a blog from AI almost all the time. Just here's what I want to say, you know, put a blog together about this, blah, blah, blah. And it does. And then he goes through and edits it to make it what he wants it to be. But I don't know that what his idealistic view of what AI could be, which I think would be awesome, and then what it actually is when bad actors get in play. Yeah. And I do think I've already heard there is a desire to create more time online for people, and they haven't even monetized AI yet. There's no monetary factor of while you're on it, you're being advertised to. When that happens, then you think the algorithm of holding people's eyeballs on your screen is going to result in monetary remuneration for your company.
Yeah, it's... See, and there's a lot of media source that's coming across my Instagram, my Facebook, et cetera, talking about people of over 40 and how they use AI versus this younger generation and how they are making these multi-million-dollar companies using AI and creating all these apps. And basically, if you aren't right there, then you're behind and that you are getting left in the dark and just all of this stuff. Mm. And gosh, the challenge is that thinking about our friend, our mutual friend's perspective on AI in comparison to how it's actually being used in the world, I think, and honestly, I think it's kind of naive. I think it's very optimistic, but I think it's kind of naive because you look back through history, you look at every advancement in technology. And there has been often the opportunity for incredible benefits to humanity, whether it be increasing health or greater communications or whatever it might be, but it also amplifies evil. And gosh, it amplifies the access of evil. It amplifies the impact of the brokenness of humanity to saturate and impact and influence the world. And I mean, you think about the printing press and the things that, oh my gosh, we were able to get all of these books and all this literature out. We were able to create all these copies of the Bible in the amount of time that it would have taken to record one book. You know, we have been able to produce hundreds and thousands of copies. Great. Yeah. But then all of a sudden you see the other things that are getting twisted into that and moved in that same technology. Or now, I mean, I remember when the internet was coming out and that was a big deal and oh my gosh. And yet now there's an entire very large portion of the web, the dark web, that is solely used in these dark detrimental society elements to be able to network and be able to sell. I mean, whether it be trafficking weapons or humans, or I mean, this horrific explicit content or all of these different things that are a part of that. And gosh, it just, I, my I would love to think that our mutual friend's perspective on AI and the tool that it can be used, et cetera, is the way that it's going to be expressed in the world. And yet it already isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that we already have teenagers that are exploiting their peers with deepfake porn and are manipulating them, blackmailing them, socially shaming them, causing suicidal ideation, suicide attempts, or actual suicide because of it. That's already a reality. And now society is scrambling to try to make up laws to prosecute people who are committing these digital crimes against each other using AI that's only been out for 3 years.
Yeah, and we don't want to be those old men on the porch saying, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
Because it is, there's never been a technology that humanity has not designed that wasn't corrupted by bad actors for bad purposes. That just has always been true. This is not going to be any different. But like our friend said, if we didn't have AI right now, we couldn't battle the hackers from China trying to break into our national defense system and to everything else. It's now a necessary tool to avoid hacking and avoid some of those things. So you've got to have it. And then and because we've done it without any kind of controls on it, there's been nobody sat down and said, where's a responsible way to use AI, and how do we put safeguards on it to make sure it doesn't, because the big fear is it becomes Terminator, right? Someday it has its own self-identity and it tries to protect itself, and I got to kill all these humans there in my way, or I've got to make batteries out of them, a la the Matrix.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know about all that. What I see that I think I'm most concerned about, and I think this is where people who use AI and whatever, is that you've got to have a relational conviction that continues to not find your life in a computer, but to find friends, brothers and sisters you can walk out your journey with and really see the difference between machines are machines and people are people, and they're not the same thing.
Yeah.
One of the things I really loved about this article, this was in Christianity Today. It was a part of a transcript between Russell Moore and Nicholas Carr on a podcast. One of the things he says, he's talking about some guy named Turkle, you know, Sherry Turkle, sociologist. See, one thing Turkle pointed out is that empathy is a complex emotion. Unlike anger and fear, which are primal emotions that come from lower down in the brain and are triggered immediately, empathy is something you learn how to feel, and it requires attentiveness to other people, trying to get inside their heads and understand them. One thing that online life steals from us is attention, because we're constantly overloaded with new messages, new information. We simply don't have time to back away from the flow and say, let me think about whether this is important. Let me just pay attention to this person. And to me, that's one of the great negatives of this whole thing. Is that we're losing these higher functions of brain stuff to have empathy and kindness. And that's why comments on Instagram feeds and Facebook, and you get in a political environment or whatever, they turn out to be just downright mean and disgusting, because people don't have a sense that there's a person on the other side of that who's being destroyed. And they're not learning the art of being involved in a relationship with give and take and respect for each other beyond differences. And that's being lost already. And this is only going to magnify that.
Yeah. I think the part of all of this, and this is hard because it's not that I want to be a stick in the mud when it comes to a new technology by any means. And yet I've never seen a greater threat to especially younger generations' ability to be able to create and cultivate authentic human connection. Because I think especially, so we're in the middle of this big program revision for my department. And one of the things that we're in the process of doing is shifting the curriculum to really teach people how to be present, how to abide, how to be attuned with another human being. What does it look like to really be present with another person? Because especially when we look at the mental health world, when we look at society and community, and what does it look like to create those relationships? One of the biggest, we don't need people we don't need a ton of people that are all licensed professionals that are just diagnosing. We still need those people. Absolutely. We still need those trained professionals. Hands down, yes. But one of the biggest deficits in our society is the inability or the lack of the skill to be able to create authentic community and relationship. And so we're literally changing our curriculum to start teaching people what does it look like to be attuned with others. And one of the big conversations about that is third spaces. I was just doing an interview last week with an individual and we were talking about third spaces and what does that mean? And in the article you sent me, it's this was one of the comments that it talked about, that until social media came along, you'd go out and you would be with one set of people. Maybe it'd be your classmates in school or your coworkers at work or your family. Maybe it would be a group of friends going out to a restaurant. You would socialize there and you would learn from one another. And then you would separate and there would be time when you would be, when you were by yourself. You could think back over what had just happened and about your relationships, and you would have downtime in which you could organize your thoughts, question yourself, and relax for a little while because there is a stress involved in socializing. And then you would go on to another place at another time with another group of people. And it's through these physical interactions that we would expand our empathetic connection to other people. And so it's those third spaces, it's those times and places where we are connecting with people intentionally, we're connecting with people relationally, we're learning. So I just had a beautiful example of God stepping in and doing that in my own life just this last week. I had a bit of a conversation, so I was back home with my family, and my family, we've been really holding. My family's in a space of transition. My dad is considering retirement. He's built up this company. He's built up this legacy. And there's been conversation in my generation about, okay, what does it look like to steward that? What does it look like to take that forward, to move that forward? And is there somebody who wants to take that over? And so one of the things that Jess and I had been really holding and praying about was like, okay, Lord, do you want me to walk away from what I'm currently doing and go back and do that? And there was definitely some advantages to it. There was definitely some disadvantages to it as well. But we were holding this in prayer and community and connection with my brother-in-law, you know, the family system. So we go to Scotland. Jess and I go to Scotland. One of the big things that I had kind of laid out there to the Lord was like, Lord, I if they take my program and they want to move it into a four-year program, then I don't know if I could be able to walk away from that. And lo and behold, that was one of the things that was happening. And then while Jess and I are in Scotland, my brother approaches my dad and says, hey, I think I want to quit my job. I think I want to do this. Like I want to take this over. And so
take the farm, over, the ranch.
Take the ranch over. Yep. Okay. And so I come back and my brother and I are processing this and he makes the comment. He's like, you know, like I was talking to dad and I just don't feel like he said that he just doesn't trust you to be able to take over the ranch and that your skill sets don't have the ability to take over the ranch. And I was like, ouch. Okay. That sucks. That wasn't very,
did you ouch at the time?
Oh, I definitely ouched at the time.
Oh, good.
I mean,
okay.
It was definitely a check-in of like, ooh, ouch. Like it didn't disengage me from the conversation. Right. But it was definitely an ouch. But what was really beautiful, so this whole thing had gone down, and what was really beautiful were the conversations that came after it. So I talked to my friend Jason Jacobs, and then I talked to my friend Giles Armstrong. Jason and I, he's known my life well.
You're quite a name dropper today, Kyle.
Sorry.
I hope they don't mind.
I already asked their permission to be able to talk about some of this, but then my friend Giles is who married Jess and I. He's been a mentor of mine since I was 19 years old. I mean, he knows my life. And there was my brother's comment definitely brought up some old wounding stuff. It brought up some old pain. It brought up some old things. It caused me to question what was my dad's intention towards my heart. Does he know me? All of these different things. But in the midst of that, I have these two individuals that I call and I'm processing with, and they not only know me, but they're sitting and they're holding this with me, with God. And there was some incredible revelation that came out of that. There was some affirmation of who I am and who God's created me to be. There was my friend Giles encouraged me to circle back to a teaching that I felt like the Holy Spirit had led me to a long time ago that had started the repair with my relationship with my dad of trust his heart. Do you trust that his heart is good? Do you trust that he loves you? And the answer was yes. And so when he circled me back to that, it was like, no, the enemy didn't have the ability to be able to come in and step in. But it was all as a result of some men who know my life, who know my heart, who have walked alongside of me long enough to know what my skill sets are, that know what my passions are, that know the things that God has kind of encouraged and challenged me in. They had the ability to reaffirm to me, Kyle, this is who you are. This is who you felt like God has called you to be. These are some of the things that God's been speaking to you over the last couple of years. And that was, Wayne, it was absolutely incredible. It was so powerful. It was beautiful. It was community. It was the bride of Christ.
What you're saying is you couldn't get this from a chatbot, huh?
Not even close.
Yeah, I hear you.
Even if you spent a long time feeding your story, your information, your life into this chatbot, it still isn't going to be able to do that at that level of empower, that level of intentionality, that level of a connection. But what shakes me to the very core of who I am is, will the up-and-coming generations know how to do that? Will they have access to that type of relationship? Will they know how to build community that has those rich intersections of life that when you're challenging, when you're going through a moment of ouch or old heartaches or deep wounding that you're wrestling through, will you have the social context around you, the social support around you that's able to really help you navigate those things? Or are you going to be by yourself looking to some computer and saying, well, I don't have anybody else around me, so I guess this is my best alternative. Or no, this computer knows me better than anyone, and so I'm just going to go back to this computer instead of taking the risk to allow myself to be seen in the world around me.
Yeah, and there's already people in my age groups and slightly lower that would say they already don't have those kinds of relationships.
Yeah.
Even among faith communities, which have become so programmed of late, that there really isn't community connection happening there. You really have to take it in your own hands with the help of the Holy Spirit to find people, to begin to build that kind of relationship with them and to find the mutuality of it that makes it work. Yeah. Otherwise, people are. It's even like therapists. You know, the cost of seeing a trauma therapist is expensive. Most people can't afford it, and there's not enough of them out there to service the need.
Yep.
So then AI becomes, is it the best? No. Is it better than nothing? Done right? Maybe it could be. And that's where the choices are going to be made. It's always what's better is to have a person face to face, listening to God together and exploring what makes that. That's what has made my life work the last 30, 40 years. Most of the relationships I had before that were very religious relationships. They were all transactional and based on what you can do for me and what I'll do for you. And, you know, it's a mutual accommodation of self-need thing that Dave Coleman used to talk about. The relationships I've had in the last 30 years with people all over the planet are deep, wonderful, authentic, real, listening to God together, looking to encourage. But I think those are still rare for some reason. We haven't, people don't have the skill set, if we're going to use that word, to find those and to build those. Because they just kind of, in the old days, churches were more community-oriented. They were smaller, less programmed out. It was potlucks. It was things that those relationships kind of surfaced naturally. Or they, in college, when you hang out with people, they kind of connect in more organic, natural ways. And then when you get to be an adult and older and busy with work and family responsibilities, finding those relationships isn't easy, but it's worth doing. Boy, the God journey is all about that right there. Authentic community, connections with brothers and sisters is so absolutely critical. And those kind of connections with the world. It's not just people who share my faith. It's extending my love and concern and empathy for people who don't share my faith and who yet have need in their life and have a need to talk to somebody and don't have it. Being the person who steps into that place, to me, that's such an incredible gift. with these people who've contacted me out of nowhere from this 2x2 bunch. Man, yeah. Being with them in Boise endeared my heart to them. And now conversations with some of them in a big room, and now more personal conversations with people who are, that's where the rubber meets the road. It's not Wayne on 200. It's Wayne with two or three. And then those two or three with other twos and threes. And that's where community, where Jesus, and I so wish when Jesus said, where two or three of you are together in my name, there I am in the midst of you. I wish he would have said, where two or three of you and only two or three of you are gathered in my name. Because the idea of trying to increase the numerical value for success needs and monetary return has corrupted the idea of what community really is. It's not just sitting in a room together, reading the same bulletins, singing the same songs. It's people who share your life and you share theirs out of genuine concern and love, not judging, not belittling, not harming, really looking how to share a relationship together built on mutual respect, love, and mercy. And where we screw up, forgiveness and mercy.
Yeah.
And that's so lacking.
And I think that's one of the big things that you talk about. Like, there's also incredible value in working through the relational struggle, in having people in your life or engaging with people that don't have the same worldview that you do, that don't have the exact same perspective. My life has been made so much richer by people who do not see the world the way that I do. And as I press into what makes them tick and what brings them life and joy and their struggles and their hopes and their victories, gosh, it adds so much context to my life and my perspective. And it's like, oh man, I never would have thought about it that way, or I would never have been able to have this conversation, or I would have never been in this space. And yet God, through his beauty, and I think through the beauty of him placing that innate human need for human relationship and connection, I think that was written into the fabric of our being intentionally by him. Yeah. To be able to experience that is those deep breaths of kingdom life that are so empowering and so life-giving.
And you don't need hundreds of those, man.
No.
If the value is I've got 10, 12 people or two or three people that I connect with at that level, and then others that I'm looking to just share some concern for that. Yeah. Take an interest in people around you. Ask the questions, just to not motivate, not push them toward the gospel or anything like that. Just take an interest in the people around you. And honestly, community will begin to take shape for you. But when even your approach to community is, I need to find people for me, it's still going to backfire. It's got to be you're taking an interest in others and then let them take an interest in you. And that's where community comes from.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com